Hello, Sagittarius, and welcome to Live from the Galactic Center. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for the next hour or so. Welcome to your astrology studio reading. I always get a little extra excited about Sagittarius, you know, because of the deep space points in your sign. And this year we have some eclipses to talk about and many other things. But before I go there, I want to start with a philosophical matter, a matter of, let's say, the meaning of life. The point of astrology, I think, is to help people make the most of their time and of their opportunities and to give you an advantage and some ideas to make your life a better place and by extension, particularly for you, the lives of the people around you. And yet, right now, the world is caught in this multi-part crisis. First, the claim of a disease and an infection. Second, the incredible fear that so many people are in. Whether the fear is justified or in many cases completely over the top does not matter. Fear is fear. And finally, there has been this profound economic stress caused by the completely incompetent and corrupt handling of the situation that is costing many people their jobs, their businesses, and their livelihoods, the impact on families of children who are unable to go to school, the impact of children who are unable to socialize with their peers, the impact on the elderly who are being isolated from their families and not being given proper emotional care or medical care, and on and on and on. The list is just endless. And I can imagine that there are many people wondering why it is that they have any right at all to aspire to more, to aspire to happiness, to aspire to accomplish the things that that you want to do with your life. The mere desire to not be afraid when so many people are struggling so much. And if that is even meekly a question for you, and I suspect that it's a question for more people than are articulating it, because we are all looking around and seeing so much suffering, and most of us are doing just a little bit better than average, I would say. But the best response I have is that this is the way that it has always been on the planet. There are always many people struggling. There are always many people in some profound state of crisis with their health and with their well-being. And there is always a constant beating of the war drum by this thing that we call the media, which to me seems to be a compliment to call it that. It would seem to be more of a state-sponsored propaganda arm at this point. Your goal, your purpose, your mission as a human being on Earth is to live your life as best you can, as ethically as you can, as lovingly as you can, as creatively as you can in the limited time that you have on this planet. And for you, there is a strong component of community awareness in this formula that I have never once heard described about Sagittarius, but it's going to be a main dominant theme of this reading. Your purpose on this earth does not change. If anything, the condition of the world right now will help you focus your purpose, your calling, your devotion to your spiritual path. If anything, the crisis that we are experiencing on earth right now will make you appreciative that you are in contact with such a larger reality than most people have access to. And to put that knowledge, to put that inherent wisdom potential to use and to bring it forward into the world in a way that will help the struggling of humanity at this time. In one sense, it is a positive thing that we can consciously bear witness to the struggle that exists, because under normal circumstances, it's very easy to pretend that this struggle does not exist. It is too easy, as Bob said, to turn your head and just look away. And now we cannot do that. Now we are being compelled by many different factors, not merely the claim of a virus. Every level of the response, every level of the impact is forcing us, compelling us, drawing us out of our isolation. Even though the attempt is to push us into deeper isolation, to make us stand apart from each other, to put us in denial that we breathe the same air no matter what. This situation is, for you, a profound calling. And knowing that, understanding that, it is an honor to be reading your astrology today and to be expressing some of what this potential is in this profoundly formative and transitional time in history that we are living in. I want to start with the big picture. I like to proceed with astrology, as Alice Bailey suggested, to go from the general to the specific, to describe the general environment, the conditions, the long transits, and then to gradually focus down on specific ideas and responses. This places what we're experiencing in the wider context that is so necessary and that I think is the ultimate underlying theme of Sagittarius, the widest context that we can be aware of, say, for example, without going into fields like metaphysics and theoretical physics and philosophy, for example, even though, as Jim Morrison joked, Sagittarius is the most philosophical sign. He was one of them. And then all the girls in the crowd cheer. And then he says, you know what I think? I think astrology is a bunch of bullshit. And then the girls all boo. I think this is on the live recording in Boston. And what makes it so funny is that Jim Morrison was the living incarnation of Sagittarius. So he could say whatever the fuck he wants. The thing that makes Sagittarius what it is, and the reason I get so excited about Sagittarius, I mean practically bouncing up and down, is that unlike any other sign, yours is has physical, documented, observable characteristics in astronomy that make it what it is. As I said in a video that I'll include with this reading, all the other signs depend upon some kind of a illusion or concept. There are no fish in Pisces. There's no sea goat in Capricorn. There's no water bearer in Aquarius. But in Sagittarius, the theme of the sign has been known for eons to be things that are very distant, that are exotic, that are inherently spiritual in nature, that involve great distances, whether that distance is across the Atlantic Ocean or around the world in some way, or whether that distance is how many megaparsecs it is to the great attractor, which is in your sign. And though the ancient lore masters and whatever, Eudoxus of Cnidos, the person who came up with the astrology that we use in approximately the 4th century BC, whatever they were getting their information from, I don't think they had any way to know that the center of our galaxy was located in Sagittarius. I don't think they had any way to know that the great attractor was in Sagittarius. And in the 20th century, astronomers actually... it was kind of an electrical engineer who discovered the galactic center because they were running telephone wires under the Atlantic Ocean, a hilariously Sagittarius thing, long-distance telephone calls, in the age when that was a really special thing. And the telephone wires became an antenna, and the antenna picked up the signal from the galactic center, and through a series of experiments, they were able to first infer and then prove that the signal was coming from the center of our galaxy, our home in space, our spiral island in space. And then it was not until about 50 years later that another team of scientists finally confirmed and rethought and basically kind of tuned up and proven in around 2014. So between 1985 or so and then 2014, a span of about 30 years, we're able to discern that the center of our galactic supercluster, 100,000 galaxies, is located right in the middle of Sagittarius. And these things are broadcasting on every frequency. Interestingly, except for certain places, visible light, which is something that we'll work into this discussion. And to have that power radiating right through your sun or your rising sign or your moon is to say something about you. It describes the utterly distinct quality of Sagittarians, which is very difficult to describe, I find, unless I'm thinking, okay, this person's got the Great Attractor and the Galactic Core in their chart. Otherwise, it's like, how do you understand all of these intense paradoxes and contradictions and the strange power possessed by those born under the sign Sagittarius? And as a human walking around in your body with this, with these essentially forces of the natural universe reigning through you, it is not necessarily easy to ground that energy in an immediate and tangible way. And one of the things I find about my Sagittarian friends, of which I have some truly important people in my life, a lover and other lovers in the past, a music teacher who set me on my musical path, there is so much coming through that it is very difficult to ground and to find direction and to find focus. I want to help with that as best I can. Fortunately, there is help on the way. Now, as for the time that we are in this moment, right in this moment, as I am doing this reading, let's just get the chart up here. Come on there, a little sprite. On the 24th of November, and I'm working right now at 12:12. It was just 12:12:12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with Aquarius rising and the moon in Aries. We are in the last month of a transition between two major eras in epical astrological history. It is difficult to say when the era that is ending began. There are a number of possible explanations of ways to, cut that gem, to describe that. And maybe in some hindsight, there will be answers to that. But what I can tell you is that the phase of history that is in beginning now extends out to 2044, but it doesn't really end there. That is just another transition point, because what happens between now and 2024 is going to set the direction of the human experiment in total for centuries to come. The way that we handle the specific questions that we are confronted now with now, the way that we handle the ethical challenges that we are confronted now, the way that we handle and whether or not we choose to stand up to the masters of technology who are trying to take over every single facet of our lives, including the essence of what it means to be human. That is what is at stake. And what we get now is, first of all, this one-month transition, fortunately, with the sun in Sagittarius, to have people being a little more optimistic, a little more aware of and sensitive to and open to the larger possibilities of life. something takes hold just at the end of the sun's journey through Sagittarius, which is that just before the winter solstice, when the sun leaves your sign, first Saturn and then Jupiter enter Aquarius after being in Capricorn for a while, and then form a conjunction on the winter solstice of 2020. They form the conjunction in the first degree of Aquarius. And there's certain ways that the universe speaks a little bit louder. And when it takes a once per 20 year conjunction and it puts it right in the first degree of a sign, particularly a sign like Aquarius, which is so, as is Sag, encompassing of the human experience and the human dilemma, we get a special message from that. And so this transition from this messy, power-driven age of Pluto in Capricorn that I'm going to say goes back to when Pluto was in your sign in 2001, at the time of the Saturn-Pluto opposition in the summer of 2001 through the spring of 2002, even though Pluto was in Sag, a deep time for you, I'm going to count that as being part of the time you live in because of the emphasis on the Saturn-Pluto cycle. Saturn opposite Pluto in 2001, and for the events of 2001, Saturn conjunct Pluto for the events of 2020. And now Saturn, then Jupiter, then Pluto are all about to move into Aquarius. Pluto is going to slide in a couple of years, so for now we are embarking on a time frame, on a phase long enough to work with, right? Not like a lot of these things in astrology where the potential is tremendous, but it goes by very quickly before we even know what is going on. The duration of Saturn in Aquarius is long enough to work with. Jupiter is not going to be there for that long. We get a solid 6 months of Jupiter in Aquarius, still enough to make an impression, enough to access. And of the two, Saturn in Aquarius for you and for all of us is by far the most significant element in your astrology at this time. And so the beauty of the moment, the Sagittarian beauty of the moment, is that it is during the sun's journey through Sagittarius. It is while the sun is aligning with the center of the local universe called Laniakea, or the Great Attractor, and while the sun is aligning with the center of the very local universe, our community in space of approximately, I guess, 300 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy happens with the sun in Sagittarius. And so there is an uplifting moment. There is a moment where we can see beyond the limited potential that this world offers and do the thing that Sagittarius does the best, which is to, in its own naive way, but wise way, point us to the much greater possibilities, the much greater life that we are living, the much larger concept of nature than we have living in the limited lives that we lead. This happens during the time of the sun in Sagittarius in 2020. And there are many things that I would like to share with you about this time in history and how they pertain to you and how you in turn can extend them to the world and to your community when I return after a short music break. This is Vision Quest. Let's go back a few years to when Pluto entered Capricorn, left your sign and entered Capricorn in 2008. And I'm only going to touch briefly on this and then catch up to late 2017. This was the making obvious of a certain kind of change in the world, a change to the structure of the world. It seemed within weeks of Pluto entering Capricorn. This was before Obama was president, in the last year of the Cheney-Bush presidency, in case you happen to think that way, or perhaps it'll help as a reference. The financial structure of the world was completely undermined and rewritten. Or rather, let's say, for this better to say, more accurate to say, that the fact that it had been undermined was revealed. And there were a series of financial collapses throughout the Western world, including many banks across Europe, almost all of them, and the United States, which had put their assets in these essentially phony mortgage-backed securities. And so there was this huge shakeup, and the business world rearranged itself. There was a recapitalization in many countries, including the United States, a little bit less so in Europe. And we saw the first effects of Pluto in Capricorn, which was a demolition of the old order. And what looked at first like a restructuring, and was for a little while, but then a continuing set of, let's say, demolition effects. And it was almost as if you would think that these globalists had consulted an astrologer to know what the appropriate thing to do during Pluto and Capricorn was, and I'm not ruling that out. But what happened was this ongoing series of collapses and essentially massive scale crime that continues to the present day. And this caused tremendous hardship for a great many people in a series of waves. There was a time of rebellion around the square of Uranus and Pluto from about 2011 to about 2013. There was the Gulf of Mexico oil spill early in that phase. I think that was in 2009. There was the Fukushima disaster in 2011. The world has been falling apart. Now, where this homes in on your chart is meaningful because Capricorn is your second house. Your second house is your spiritual bank account. It is your place where you invest in yourself. It is also a place where we can look to for information about your values. It is where we can look for information about the rules by which you guide your life. And if we use Capricorn in the second house as a guide, what we find out is that you prefer contact with tradition and in a certain way are a keeper of tradition. Capricorn, along with Taurus, is one of the two signs that much of the job of that energetic quality, that vibrational quality, that thing that distinguishes the element silver from something made out of plastic, or that distinguishes air from wood, is held in Capricorn as the thing where we accumulate the, in a sense, the power of the past and the power of what we learn from our lives on Earth. And this can be held in the form of tradition. It can be held in the form of institutions, whether we're talking about the post office or the government or the church, which is not these. Let's just suffice it to say, it does not always work out well to invest so much energy in these institutions. But the thing about them is that they tend to gather momentum and feed on themselves. And the place where you are drawing, in the first instance, your sense of what is right and true for you is from Capricorn. And so this may have dissolved as you have grown older. I've watched interesting life developments of some of the younger Sagittarius I've known as I've watched you mature and grow, is that initially there's a very strong clinging to tradition and to a kind of orthodoxy. What Pluto through Capricorn has done is basically step by step in its incremental way with a few big bursts, demolish even the potential of depending upon orthodoxy as a way of life. And this has upended your value system over and over again. And when your value system is upended, it is likely that you are going to feel disoriented, because the references to the past that you have, the references that you depend on for comparison, for knowing what to do at a certain time, and speaking of time, for even how you think of and manage time, have all been knocked down like so many tenpins, only they were made of ceramic and they shattered. And you have been left with, therefore, a kind of an, I don't want to say injury, but a destabilization that has required you to do two things. One is to adapt to the destabilization, and then the second thing is to find new ways to stabilize yourself, to find new places where there might be some solid ground that you can orient on. One of them, by the way, one of the very most important for you, is the work that you do. You don't necessarily need solid ground or orthodoxy in some form of theory. What I think that you need more than anything in the whole wheel, anything described by the astrological wheel, is described by the sign Taurus, which is in your sixth place. If you're Sag rising, it's your sixth whole sign house. If you're Sag sun, it is your sixth solar house. For the purposes of this reading, they are the same thing. And where you have Taurus, you have a kind of an applied use of tradition and a grounding in the physical plane. For Sagittarius, this is absolutely crucial to have tangible forms of grounding in the physical plane, whether it is your coin collection, whether it is a forest that you like to visit, whether it is your favorite tree that you like to hang out with. And in the case of the sixth house, the work that you do that you stabilize yourself on. I am of the persuasion that people have the most problems when they don't have work that they value, which is what Taurus is. It is something that is a prized thing, or a thing treated with beauty, with love, and with respect. That when that is not connected to work, everyone can struggle with that. And by work, I mean day-to-day purpose. The activity that you do that gives your life not just philosophical meaning, but a sense of connection and interrelation with other people who are themselves expressing purpose. But it's much more personal for you than that, because you just need to have a place where you can ground, where you feel good, where you feel meaning, where you personally feel the value of what you feel, where you respect what you do and what your purpose is, and that is found in Taurus. Now, we've talked about the kind of demolition of Pluto going through Capricorn, which I think on the individual personal level will work out in the end to have served you very well, because I don't think that too much adherence on orthodoxy, sometimes to the point of piousness, which is not a Sagittarian characteristic per se, but rather one that feeds into Sagittarius through Capricorn, is particularly good. And so this opportunity has been in a sense, made unavailable, and you've had to go elsewhere to find what I will call meaning that is true for you, purpose that is true for you, and a place to put meaning, purpose, and activity together. And the beauty of Taurus is that it must be tangible. Taurus is nothing if not tangible. It is the quality of the fabric. It is the quality of the wood. It is the beauty of the space that you are in. And by the way, it is very important that you work not only in a beautiful space and in a properly equipped space, but in a place where you feel good, where your body feels good, where the textiles and the substances that you come in contact feel good, that the lighting is suitable to your needs and your desires. Now, in a similar way as Pluto has moved through your second house, removing these possibilities of being, you know, what I'm calling orthodox and pious, there's been another similar process, a lot more fun, of Uranus in the past 2 years working its way through Taurus, this place of work, meaning, and purpose in the everyday world, not the future, not in potential, not what you hope to get in a workshop, but rather what you come back to every day and what you do. The things that you make with your hands are the sixth house. And what Uranus has done is it has infused that sixth house Taurus, which can get stuck. I mean, Taurus can easily get stuck. It has infused that sixth house purpose with new found energy, with a touch of creative chaos that for you is a very pleasant sensation. And it is infusing the traditional with this kind of radical and innovative and revolutionary, which I would say, if you're an artist or any form of a creative person, even a salesperson of some kind, you know that that infusion of the traditional and the radical is pretty much the source of your alchemical magic. And now you have this going on in a nice transit, which will last about five more years with Uranus in Taurus. And so this is to say, first of all, keep moving toward what you find interesting. There is no way that you can work at something that is boring and be happy. I mean, it is possible for you to work at something that is boring. It is possible for you to work at something that is based only in responsibility for a while. You are adaptable to a point. You are, you have the ability to do something out of duty for a while, but only for a while. And what I believe, in my perception, that you need is to be connected to something exciting and meaningful and immediate where you have creative influence over what you're doing and you're not dictated to by others. And serve others. You are very good at that, but ultimately you have to be your own creative channel, and that creative channel has to have some part of it that's not impeded by structure. And the thing about having all that Capricorn in your chart, or let's say formerly having Capricorn, having been thoroughly worked over by Pluto and then by Saturn the past 3 years, is that any capacity that you had to serve purely as a matter of responsibility and duty has been basically demolished, and now you must have a sense of responsibility and duty that you can express only if you can bring in some element of your true creative joy. There's one other thing about Uranus going through this sign, and we'll come back to this when we pick up on matters of Aquarius, is that Uranus has an emphasis on group activity. And so though Sagittarians are among the truly lone wolf people of the zodiac, this is a time in your life when collaboration is very important. But it must for you be collaboration among equals and collaboration where there is, let's say, honest and innovative and creative leadership involved. The ideal form of that leadership is a kind of a spontaneous, non-central leadership that emerges as a group of people who have found their individuality begin to harmonize and cooperate with one another and get a synergistic effect going where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. That is the you know, true possibility of leadership in the new age. Obviously, there are going to be people there who have some greater sense of vision, but ideally, they will be serving mostly in a coordinating role, and they will be fed by the creativity of many people around you. It is unlikely that in the past you wanted to be in that coordinating role because it's a lot of responsibility, it's difficult, and because you've got to, you know, you have to coordinate people, and even on a good day, that's challenging and a happy challenge if you keep a good attitude. However, you may find yourself being more the channel of this super intelligence as the next few years develop. I was in the shower this morning, where I guess a lot of writers do some of their best thinking, and it occurred to me what the theme of Saturn in Capricorn has been. Saturn enters Capricorn in late 2017, so it leaves your sign and enters Capricorn in late 17. I think it dips back into Sagittarius briefly, and then it re-enters at a certain point. I'm a little foggy on that. We're talking 3 years ago. It's been a lot of water under the bridge. But I may be wrong, it may have just ingressed, but we're looking at late 2017 for the first ingress of Saturn into Capricorn, and that is going to span through mid-December of 2020. And I'm thinking, what is the theme of all that? And I got it. It is accusation and conviction without proof, and the appeal to authority. The two most massive news stories that have dominated society and consciousness and seem to have seized culture were the Me Too movement in 2018 and 2019, and then COVID all through 2020. And if you really study these things, they have those two things in common: accusation and conviction without proof, and then everything being based on the appeal to authority. It's true because that person in power said so. It's true because that person who we want to trust said so. It must be right because all these scientists say that. It must be right because it's an orthodox view of say, for example, the nascent and newfound science of virology. And the next thought in my mind was that the potential for the radiant, transcendent beauty of Saturn and Jupiter in Aquarius, particularly in your chart, is going to be the possibility of the emergence of true science. True science. Now, I mean something specific by that. Science has rules. Science is an incredible invention. It is in a sense I guess the product of this thing called the Enlightenment, which is not a good word for that, but it is an application of a set of methods. It is the application that I would propose derive from mathematics, because mathematics, apart from rhetoric, mathematics is the home of true logic. My favorite mathematics has always been geometry, and what I loved about geometry were the proofs of postulates, where you start with an idea, a squared plus b squared plus c squared in a right triangle, and then you can go through a set of steps to prove that that is always going to be true. And then what seemed to happen is this concept was applied to the natural world, not just the theoretical world of mathematics, where people started to have the idea that we've got to actually figure out what's going on here, and not make a supposition like the Pope might make, right, or some religious authority or God Emperor. And there's, you know, history is just demolished with these people who claim the power of God, and then because what they claim the power of God, what they said is right and true. Science is the answer to that. Science is saying, okay, maybe this is not an evil spirit. Maybe there's something else going on here. Science requires logic. Science requires that we take steps, and that each step be taken and not skipped over, and that suppositions be accounted for, and that assumptions be accounted for. You are blessed with the gift of a scientific mind. Though you have this thing going on in Capricorn where you adhere to orthodoxy, that can work if you use if you rely on orthodoxy for what it's supposed to be relied upon, which is understanding there must be a framework of knowledge for knowledge to be relevant. When we go to the next house, the third house, Aquarius is there, and we get a much more sophisticated concept of structure, which now embraces energy. Capricorn is the solid form. Aquarius in the next house is the energetic form. Both Capricorn and Aquarius have properties of structure, right? They both depend upon a concept of structure, but the concept of structure in Aquarius is one that is much more subject to the rules of energy than it is subject to the rules of the purely material world. And that is where you need to go when you are making the connection between abstract ideas and tangible ideas. Your mind needs to be able to think in ways that are disciplined, but not limited. And this is the gift of Aquarius. Now, I say this because you have Aquarius on the third house. The third house, in a personal chart, represents the qualities of thought, the properties of the mind, the method of communication, the approach to communication, the approach to ideas. So the third house, therefore, is about writing. It's about local communication. It's about the local community. It is about the It's similar to what happens when we place Aquarius on this house for you, because both the third house and Aquarius have a concept of collective reality. The thing about the third house without Aquarius is it can be a smaller concept of a collective reality, but when you take the third house and you put Aquarius on it like you have, you get the concept of a much larger collective reality. But what you also get is the possibility of clean, pure logic as a resource, not a thing to be imprisoned by, but as a guide, as a thing where you know that there are 12 steps to the proof. You can't skip steps like 3, 6, and 9 and still say that you got through the 12 steps to the proof. What Aquarius wants you to do is to take every step of the proof and see what you get. And if we're really talking about science, you will then challenge your finding, you will redo the experiment, you'll go through the steps again, and you'll see what result you get, and you'll keep doing it. And then you'll send the instructions to someone else in another part of the world and see if they can replicate the experiment in another part of the world, independent of you and any potential bias that you have. The very exciting thing that is happening for you as a, let's say, moment in your development is that Saturn and Jupiter are about to arrive in this zone of your chart, which is to my reading of your chart, giving you the possibility of the potential for the necessary growth step of fully developing the quality, the beauty, and the power of your intellect in these forthcoming years. Be back in a moment. The bottom line here, putting this all together, is that you are evolving from a frame of mind that is based on faith, which is an inherent property of Sagittarius, a set of references that are based on orthodoxy and tradition and what is true merely because it is said to be true, and you are moving into your own personal enlightenment of having your own standard of proof of the truth for yourself. Now, I say all this recognizing that not everything can be proven true, but that is not an excuse for trying. That is not an excuse for not applying logic and reason to your experience. And I think you will find it a tremendously refreshing exercise to just apply the basics of logic and reason to your experience and see what you come up with when you do that. You may come up with some very surprising results, and these results may serve to shift your beliefs. They may serve to shift the ground on which you stand and help you establish a new reality. My sense is that you are going to be in a leadership role when it comes to holding other people to their version of how they claim to establish the truth. Science is a big one right now. Science is the religion of our times, and we're in this era where, you know, the Pope of Science can say something and everyone believes it, but the question is, how did you get there? And so your role, your whole mind is shifting. And this is central. It is about you, but it's also about your central place in the community as someone who just simply asks the same question over and over again, which I like to summarize in three words. Where is your data? Anyone making a claim needs to produce their data. Now, if we are to take the statement that meditation is the key to enlightenment, well, you can try that and see if it happens, but even the statement meditation is the key to enlightenment requires some gathering of evidence, unless you just simply do it and have the direct experience. And your houses of having the direct experience are well lit right now, third and sixth, but the thing that you want to make sure you're not doing is, or that you are, let's say, for example, testing, is generalizing your experience out to other people, to even to very wide, far-reaching, society and community, or taking what others hold to be true, and then in any way feeling forced to adopt it without running it past your set of proofs. The essence of the sign Aquarius is the relationship between the individual and the group. I've said this a number of times, and it always bears repeating because who knows if you happen to have encountered it. But the best description of Aquarius, the best description of the signs, if you're interested in the signs, is in Alice A. Bailey's Esoteric Astrology. Once you've read her descriptions of the signs, you will never look at them the same way again, and you'll be filled with both understanding and respect. And what she says about Aquarius is that it is the sign of groups, but a group is a group of individuals. A group is not a bunch of people in a football stadium cheering. That is a mass. A group is an assemblage of people who have done sufficient work individuating such that they are able to think for themselves, be themselves, and have their own thoughts. And then those people come together and form a group, because no one in that collective, whatever you want to call it, committee, whatever, is likely to be pushed over by some form of false consensus. And so one of the things you're going to be doing, and probably are doing, but now we're about to have the full strength conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn for the first time in 20 years happening in this place in your chart. Previously, by the way, it happened in Taurus in 2000. Now it's happening in Aquarius in 2020. Is that you're going to set the example for, I'm an individual. This is how I come to my conclusions. This is the proof that I require before I accept something as true. This is my decision-making process. This is how I choose to relate to other people. And it starts with you knowing your own mind and being fully dedicated to minding your business sufficiently that you can enter into business with others and not have them take advantage of you. Okay, let's go in order and cover at least two more houses. Even if we don't get to the other houses, I'm confident that if we cover houses 4 and 5, we've already covered 6. We will have enough for you to run with and to think about, hopefully. Okay, house 4. Now, house 4, to Sagittarius, is Pisces. The 4th is always a tricky house because it's the house where we mediate the whole matter of security and safety. And security and safety are almost completely an illusion on this planet, but the feeling of safety and security are not an illusion. And they carry considerable power. But then funny things happen. Like once I locked my keys in my apartment when I lived in Belgium. And when I live in a place, you know, I've got some cameras and some computers and things like that. It's not just pencils and paper. And so I thought, okay, now I've got to break in, which I had never done. Now, I traveled a lot when I lived in Belgium, right? I'd lock my stuff in my little studio, and I'd go far away, and trusting that my place was secure. And all I did was I leaned on the door, not even with my full weight, no momentum, just gently leaned on it, and the thing popped open, and the door frame broke. Like, wow, all this time I thought, I was locking my door and it was secure, and all I had to do was basically push a little and it popped open. This is the kind of thing that you need to be aware of. I suggest you do a general security check that of your premises, whatever they might be. Account for who has keys to your home. That you do a digital security check. Change your passwords, account for who might have them, come up with a whole new password scheme. If you've used one password scheme for a long time, please don't use passwords like Open Sesame or Password One. And then on a nightly basis, do a perimeter check. Walk the perimeter. I learned this from a cat. My friend Gene Treadway had a cat who used to do a perimeter check every night. This cat would literally walk the bounds of the apartment or the home, and just as a matter of instinctual common sense, make sure that like everything was copacetic in the circumference of the living area. I now, having learned from a kitty cat, do this almost every night. I will walk downstairs. I will check the Planet Waves office. I will turn the heat off. I will turn the computers down. I will lock an intermediate door. Then I'll go downstairs and add an extra lock. This is my nightly ritual, just as a to add a little extra barrier and to know that I'm going to sleep with a little bit of extra confidence that I have at least done what I can do. But there's a deeper question here, which is your emotional and spiritual security, which with Neptune, with Pisces on the 4th, has its own special set of rules. It is going to be, you're going to want that level of safety to be on a higher level than the material world. And with Neptune there, you're going to want it to be on an even higher level than the material world, which is to say that when you know that you are spiritually safe, you are safe. But this is a real question. This is an important approach to spirituality, which easily a book could be written about, which is the whole matter of what safety and security really are about. And here's the thing to be mindful of, given that that this fourth house is in such special condition with the long-term visit of Neptune, which can stir up a lot of doubt and insecurity. Do an audit of all of the concepts of what it meant to be safe from your family and relatives. This includes particularly your parents and grandparents, but you want to definitely check in on aunts and uncles because they can be very influential people, sometimes taken more seriously than parents. We know are always a little bit twisted and warped and maybe a little bit overdo it, but you trust your uncles and your aunts, I think, and they treat you more like people than as children. Do an audit of all of the concepts that you have of what it means to be safe and secure, and subject those to this new form of Aquarian logic that is going to be infusing your life now for the coming years. Speaking of that, one of the reasons, and I didn't mention Pluto in there, so before I go on to the fifth house, by far the best house for you this year, before I mention the fifth, let's talk about one last thought in the third. One of the reasons why you want to establish your own rules of thought, of proof, of logic, and of communication, and constantly subject those rules to reevaluation is that Pluto is coming. Pluto arrives in 2023. It stays through 2024. That's a long span. We have never, none of us alive, have had Pluto spend that much time in a sign. Many of us will not live through Pluto in Aquarius. I will be 80 when Pluto leaves Aquarius. That's a long time. When this happens, there's going to be a massive sea change of a new form of authoritarianism that we are seeing take shape now and must push back against now, which if you're wondering why it is that I am so obsessed, and I admit that I am obsessed with teaching the scientific method and with holding scientists to the rules of science. Now, I have found this as a kind of a late stage calling in my investigative reporting career, why I am so obsessed with Koch's postulates and Rivers' postulates and the rules of isolation and purification, is because we all need to be holding the masters of science and of technology to their own laws and their own rules before they get to take over completely, imposing their false narratives and false rules and false methods on us during Pluto in Aquarius. Pluto in Aquarius can be, if we are not careful, the time of transhumanism, the time of sacrificing our humanity to this mechanical, programmed, algorithmic, robotic form of humanity that has been slipping in since the earliest time of the computing era. And remember that one of the first things that computers were used to do was, yes, to break the Nazi code. Turing did that, and computers were used by the Nazis to essentially inventory concentration camp prisoners. So computers have a really spotty record of use, but one of the things we know about them is that they teach us to think like them, and we have to keep thinking like humans, which means thinking individually, which means having your own policy of thought on a conscious level. And because I've been doing so much teaching of Koch's and Rivers' postulates, I have been, and scientific method, isolation, purification, and the history of the polymerase chain reaction, and all this, these purely technical, logical matters, I have seen how much mushy, soft thinking there is, and how quickly people revert to the appeal to authority and to skipping the steps of proof but claiming that they have proof, as if they really can turn this perfectly fine cracker into the body of Jesus Christ. And I speak as someone who has a personal friendship with Jesus, but it has nothing to do with crackers. And I've got a lot of people around the world eating crackers thinking they're getting the body of Jesus. Okay, that's fine for church. But it's not the way we run society now. We don't run society on the basis of that guy with a PhD said so, or at least that's not the safe way to run society. And so what I am calling you to do is to step into your full intellectual power, which is considerable. And it is partly so beautiful because you are blessed with this direct connection to spirit through the galactic center and the great attractor. Yes, symbolic on one level, but you've got these powerhouses of cosmic energy pouring right through you. You have direct contact. And with that direct contact, you then want to make sure that you're translating things into the human realm, such that when you say, I'm taking this on faith, you mean it. Or when you say, I have done the logic, and this is what I come up with, that holds up, but that doesn't hold up, you mean it. Okay. Fifth house, then eclipses. And I will have a lot to say about eclipses in forthcoming editions of Planet Waves, and I wrote about them last night. We will include that on the resources page, and that page will build up. I'm going to post the audio first, and then start to post more resources. But we want the eclipses article and these beautiful charts I'm looking at. Okay, fifth house. Your fifth house is Aries, in a way similar that your work must be relevant and meaningful and in accord with your values, that it must be beautiful and of service and of value to others, but mostly of value to you that you then share with others. You take a similarly personal approach to your creative life. In fact, this is so powerful that we could say that the thing that Sagittarius orients on as its cosmic footing on the physical plane is your identity as one who is capable of creation in the way that God is capable of creation. And this is the goal of most honest spiritual paths, not to make a person submissive to a set of ideas, but to teach you to allow creation to flow through you. And this is how you find yourself. This is how you find your place and your way in the world. And what you have now is Chiron moving through your fifth house. If you're Sag rising, your fifth solar house. If you're Sag, if you're Sag sun, and your fifth lunar house, if you're Sag moon. And what Chiron is doing is intensifying this process. It is raising this to a kind of a critical mass point where you are always self-creating at the same time that you are creating something seemingly external to yourself. That all creation is an act of self-creation. And this is the, let's say, threading the needle of Chiron in Aries. Okay, so this is not always going to be comfortable. It's not always going to be easy because Chiron is what Al Morrison called the inconvenient benefic. It benefits our lives, but in ways that are sometimes just a little difficult or tricky or inconvenient or not the way you were expecting things to work out. But then suddenly that crisis, that trauma, that sickness, that injury, that difficulty, you realize in retrospect, actually empowered you, compelled you to grow, and made you a better, more connected, more aware person. This is the key to Chiron. There's been tremendous emphasis on this house in 2020 because Mars has done its retrograde here exclusively and is still working its way out. In the charts that I'm using, Mars is still in basically mid-decanate of Aries, will be working its way through Aries clear through the end of 2020. And so this is the time to take creative risks. That really means trying something you've never tried, doing something that challenges who you are, doing something you'd say, well, I never thought I would make a movie, but I'm going to make a movie. I never thought that I would be a sculptor, but I'm going to be a sculptor. I never thought I would embark on this creative experiment, but I'm doing it. That's the spirit of Chiron in the fifth house. There's also a sexual dimension. Chiron in the fifth wants experience, and it wants physical experience. And I recognize, particularly as a scholar of the history of sexuality and of contemporary sexuality, that all sex is now in the process of being pushed into online environments. It's been like this for a long time with meeting people, where the only place to meet someone is on meetup.com or findtheperfectchristian.com or asiansingles.com or whatever they're called, my secret bubble, whatever. Now, the attempt is being made to digitize all forms of sex. This is completely ridiculous. It can be fun to do certain forms of digital sex, but you need, for your growth, for your pleasure, for your freedom, for your finding out who you are, physical, human experiences where there is some sense of, is this the right thing? The only way to find out is not only to try it once, but to try it a couple of times, to make sure that you know that it is or isn't the right thing. Okay, let's talk eclipses. There are two rather glorious eclipses that take place with the Sun in Sagittarius. The first one takes place on November 30th, which is a penumbral lunar eclipse at the time of the Gemini full moon. This is a good time to pay attention to a relationship and make sure that you call back in your projections onto the relationship. The experience of this penumbral full moon, penumbral lunar eclipse full moon in Gemini, is to teach you to see when you are projecting certain qualities onto a person that might not be there. They might be there, they might not be there. And so the eclipse is an experiment. It is a test. And with all of these factors, whether we're talking, let's see, just to refresh my memory, all this activity in Aquarius, all right, this emphasis on what you could call true science, the emphasis on the fifth house of creativity, the emphasis on the sixth house of work, all calling for direct experience, the eclipse in your seventh house is saying, what experience do you have to demonstrate that a person or a relationship is the person that you think that they are? Okay, second eclipse, truly stunning event. This is a total solar eclipse, a conjunction of the Sun and the Moon, conjunct a minor planet called Varda. Varda is the great goddess of the Tolkien pantheon, of what is called the Legendarium. Legendarium is a word with only one meaning. It is the total collective set of legends as set forth by J.R.R. Tolkien in The Hobbit and in The Lord of the Rings, but most significantly in an earlier work called The Silmarillion, where he gives the history of the universe, of the world, of the gods and goddesses, of the angels, of the elves, and of humanity. Varda is the supreme queen of heaven. She is an absolutely outstanding character. She is involved with tree worship in that she is involved with the relationship between trees and light. In the early days of the Silmarillion, the light of the world came from two trees, and the trees were murdered by an entity called Morgoth, who was assisted by another entity called Shelob. Or Shelob's mother, I think. Maybe it was Ungoliant. Shelob's mother, a spider, a really nasty spider. And no offense to spiders. As a writer, they're my most important totem. But Ungoliant and Morgoth kill these trees, and it is Varda who is able to re-illuminate the world with the sun and the moon, and to place the sun and the moon in their courses to create the difference between day and night, to create the cycles that we live with, and seasonal cycles, solar cycles, lunar cycles, and the solar-lunar cycle known as an eclipse. And now we have a total solar eclipse conjunct Varda. To me, the presence of Varda in this chart is the most, I just don't really think in terms of hope, but I have actually experienced hope reading this chart, that there is some light at the end of this tunnel. And if there is light at the end of this tunnel, it is going to be the light of feminine wisdom in the true sense. I do not mean feminism. I do not mean philosophical feminine. I mean the cosmic feminine that we and you can be a direct channel of this quality. This is opposite a point called Asbolus. Asbolus focuses on urgency. This is such a crazy exact alignment between sun, moon, Varda, and Asbolus that it is the perfect description of the survival necessity of grounding in, of channeling in, of making contact with, and having the utmost respect for feminine, cosmic feminine wisdom. And this is the theme of the Sagittarius total solar eclipse, in my opinion, and it is conjunct the galactic center, which only adds to the emphasis and the basically unbelievable quality of this eclipse. And this is in your solar return chart. This is in the set of instructions that you are in possession of. You might say instructions or guidance or suggestions or something that describes the cosmic timing of your life right now. These are profoundly important years for you, and I suggest that you keep your mind on the most important lifetime priorities. We can no longer live like we have 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 years or like our whole lives ahead of us. We can also no longer live like there is no tomorrow at all. We cannot live like there is no hope, no potential, no possibility. We must find the middle ground between carpe diem, between seizing the day, and between knowing that we must work with the time that we have. You have been allotted time. You have been given time to do the work that you have to do. And that allotment of time presents you with a space within which to work and to fulfill your purposes. That allotment of time gives you the ability to abide in your time. I think the expression "bide your time" really means abide in your time. Live in the time that you are alive. Live in the time that you have. Be the mission that you have come here to do. It is beyond impossible that you came into this life without a sense of mission. And you find the sense of mission two ways. You find it through a sense of intuition and faith, which I think are very similar things, a sense of guidance. But then you inhabit and incarnate and abide in that mission through an ongoing series of experiments, an honest evaluation of those experiments. And this will gradually shape and form and bring forth the person that you are. Please have faith that you are doing this for yourself, and at the same time, you are doing this for all the people who are around you, and that all the people who are around them, who you may not have any contact or experience with, and depending on what you do, your words, your thoughts, your images, your ideas, your prayers, your vibrational frequency will affect many, many people that you are not aware of. So stay centered. Keep your emphasis loving and positive. Courageous, yes, but loving and positive. That is what I have to say to you on this day, this beautiful autumn day here in upstate New York. And I'll leave you with a little bit more of this piece called Live from the Galactic Center. I know it's a little on the hard rock side for what I normally do and for Vision Quest, but that is the vibration that came through for Sagittarius. So rock out, rock on, do the things that you love to do. Now is the time. Lots of love, and bye for now.